gals from Equine Connection, the Academy of Equine Assisted Learning. Hi, I'm Carrie.
I'm Carolyn.
And I'm Carson.
Welcome to our podcast.
You will be listening to some of our best moments of helping people to live their best lives, and all while, get this, working with horses.
We will be your hosts and have tons of guests along the way. Subscribe today and happy listening.
Hello, hello, and welcome back to the Welfare Series with Equine Connection. My name is Carolyn Charles. I'm the Director of Sales and Marketing, as well as a Master Instructor and Facilitator with Equine Connection, the Academy of Equine Assisted Learning. And we're bringing Brie out today.
Hello.
Because we actually have her in our tight little grasps here. So you can introduce yourself to Brie.
Well, thanks, Carolyn. My name is Brianne Hingley. I am a facilitator and assistant instructor here for the Equine Connection, the Academy of Equine Assisted Learning.
You like the long name.
I did it.
Yeah.
Good.
Yes. I'm so impressed.
Yes,
and we've got some people joining us already, so that's fantastic too. But just a quick little intro of what we're doing here is we are continuing this welfare series so we can make sure we are always keeping our horses at the top of our list for how we are treating them, how we are working with them, and how they are really being utilized. This is really not the right word, but how we're working with them. I like that.
I guess how they're being incorporated.
Thank you.
That's into what we're doing, into our work with humans and our work above and beyond horsemanship.
And even if you're not in equine assisted learning, this is really for any person in any horse industry. Welfare of your horses should always come first.
Yes.
So that's what we're going to be talking about today. And we have a beautiful guest, one near and dear to our hearts. Miss Jane Hemingway Moore is here from Terrey Hills, just outside of Sydney, Australia. Now, I've got a whole thing I can read here about Jane. But at the same token, I have to let you guys know that she is our instructor in Australia. And she's not only beautiful at instructing, she's also a phenomenal human being. And one of the first people I ever met who had her own personal mission statement. And when she told us, I was like, this woman is freaking amazing. Amazing in the first place. So Jane has done a ton of things. She has opened up Willowwood Stables, where she is hosting the certification courses. Sorry, guys, I had a back issue, so I'm somewhat medicated, but I'll get through this.
Aren't we all?
Yes. So, Jane set up Willowwood Stables as a performance horse adjustment. Oh my goodness. Training and coaching facility, and she's also qualified as a riding coach. But she also has leading edge life skills out of there as well since 2015, which is also where she trains our certified facilitators and she runs her equine assisted learning programs. But for Jane, that is not all that she does. No. This woman can speak, three languages?
German, French.
Oh, German mainly. A little bit of French. Yeah.
I can say you like turkey on your sandwich in French. So if you're past that.
I think I can speak like a dictionary. Salty.
She's also been in national and international marketing as well as public relations experience. She's got strong communication skills. And seriously, this woman is not only strong in communication, but she's freaking funny on top of it. And she does social media, website management. She's a rider instructor.
That's right.
This beautiful woman really does have the best mind for working with her horses as well, because she never just treats them as tools or just as, you know, things to go out and play with once in a while. You really do look at your horses and their welfare all of the time. And that's really kind of what we're going to be talking about with Jane here today too. So welcome, Jane, everyone.
Yes, thank you.
I could have put a better intro there, but there's just not enough words to sing your praises, Jane. I don't know what I could say.
You make me blush, but seriously, I'm really humbled to be among the caliber of guests that you've had on this show. So thank you very much for asking me. At first, I actually thought, you know, why are they asking me? But then I realized that my experience is actually quite relevant, because living, as you said, on the outskirts of a big city, there are a lot of people who, like myself, have small acreage, and that presents a whole lot of different aspects of managing horses. Mm-hmm. So, you know, when I say small acreage, I'm literally on 5 acres, which is very small, which is 2.5 hectares, whatever language people are speaking.
Here in Canada, we go by acres as well.
Yeah. Well, we actually do too here. We always refer to it as acres. And Carolyn's been to our place, and one side of the road is literally houses, just normal housing blocks and houses. And on our side of the road, there's a few acreage properties. So, you know, we're really close to the hub of things, which has huge advantages, of course, from like a business point of view, and allowing horses to come into the lives of so many people, people who would otherwise not even kind of see a live horse, or let alone be able to touch one or possibly ride one, whatever. So I love that about it.
I said you're able to bridge the gap there.
Her place is like fairyland. Like, it's the most beautiful place. Like, you walk outside, and it's lovely pool there, and she's got like beautiful pieces of art. And then you walk down with, and everything's and then you meet her stunning horse. Like, seriously, the place is just phenomenal. When we went there, we're like, this is awesome.
And you put a lot of work into your acreage.
Oh, we actually do. So it wasn't like that when we moved here. We've done a lot of work, and our priority was setting up for the horses. So, and even then, when we renovated our house, we couldn't, because it was a big renovation, we couldn't move out because we needed to be here for the horses. So we, you know, you juggle everything to make it their welfare, you know, top of mind all the time. So as you said, yay, small farms.
Small farms, people.
Absolutely.
Well, that's true. And not growing up in the country, I actually grew up in Sydney. I didn't have that background of being able to manage anything bigger anyway. So it's already been a huge learning curve for me. I've been here for about 8 years. So I've had horses. I've been around horses since I was 9 years old, and I'm a lot older than that now. but seriously, had got really back into horses, say about probably in my late 30s, and I'm now in my early 50s. And then I've had this place for 8 years, so lived with them day to day for 8 years, and it's such a steep learning curve, and it's really amazing. So I picked up a lot of tips of what I would do and wouldn't do when I had my horses boarded elsewhere. I took a lot of great advice from people who know a lot more than me, and I still do, and I would always recommend that, to always go to people who've been doing it a long time. You find your mentors in these sort of things. So, yeah, it's been really, really huge. But one of the things that really hit me was there's a lot of looking after their physical well-being, of course, because they don't have the acres and acres to roam and forage and do what horses do. You kind of got to simulate that they feel like horses in this small area. So I'll get on to that. But the other thing is also just physically. Like, as I said, we live on a road. We need to have good fencing so that we have an escape artist. We don't want to be
That's a big risk. You don't want a horse coming out on the road. That's major.
No, exactly. It's funny. One night, it was around midnight, and we all heard a horse galloping around. It was before we had our front fence actually really up and fixed. And we thought, one of the horses is out and galloping around. Well, it wasn't one of ours. It was a horse that had lived here for many years before we bought it. And he would come home. So he would kind of canter like about the couple of kilometres where he'd moved to and come back here. So that was really cute. So they do get to like
That's so sweet.
Yeah. Wow. We saw someone rocking up with a horse float. We thought, oh my God, they're horse wranglers. But no, they were actually getting their own horse back, which is
terrible. They're not your horse. They're just retrieving their own horse. Because this is a really important topic, I think.
Oh, for sure.
Like, especially when you look at the wellness of a horse, its environment and its living conditions are, you know, one of the top things that you can have. And I know you guys, obviously, on your small acreage, it's a huge job.
Yeah. And so when did it become like super important to you to look at this welfare portion? Was it like right when you moved there, or what made you think differently about having a small farm?
Well, for me, I think you're right. I think that we automatically think of the physical well-being. So you automatically think, oh, I have to feed them, and they need good fencing, they need clean water, access to water, all that sort of stuff. So the emotional well-being was something that really hit me as well. And the horses are, as we know through our work, the best teachers of letting you know how they're feeling. So
well. They're true. And they don't lie.
No, they do not lie. Exactly. Right. So just things like, so with the physical type thing, yes, the fencing is very important, safe fencing. We have show jumpers, so it has to be high enough.
42 inches isn't going to solve much there.
So things like that. And then their feed, of course, because they can't forage and graze all day. Well, they can, but then they eat it down very quickly on such small acreage. You have to provide things like, constant kind of small feeding. And for the ones that are real, just like humans, some of them just, munch in and eat too quickly. So things like slow feeder hay nets for their hay. So they can't just do that. I know Carly had to do that too with the big bale. I remember I was there.
Yeah, she had a net over it.
And so with us, it'd be more like, a one that you would possibly hang somewhere so it's safe, but it's got the small hole. So it simulates them, just picking that a horse does naturally rather
than. It also prevents cribbing as well. Mm-hmm. Like when a horse blind can be busy and it can be doing something that's natural to them. It really helps protect their stomach and all of their digestion as well.
Yeah, exactly right. We have one of my horses is a cribber, and basically she just has constant food, and that helps.
Yes.
So she's just always as if she was out on hundreds of acres just grazing. So that's really good. You're right.
Yeah. Because some people.
Yeah, and then we do have to micromanage the diets though, because we have, we have the. The real athletes, the show jumpers, and then we have our EAL horses. So they've got different workloads.
And the pony as well. Yeah.
Oh, yes. And with him, we've got to manage his diet really carefully because he's kind of like a little horsey Labrador and he would just eat himself to death.
Yeah.
And that's not good. Gives himself colic. So we've got to really manage the times he's out. And he can graze just on our garden lawn. He's so little.
Yeah.
We can't let him out there all day. Like he really bloats. We've got to bring him in and, just feed, kind of drip feed him and manage that really well. There's the feeding is really, really important and watching their weight because just like us, it's not too good to be too big, too small, anything like that. Their luster of their coat and their eye, those signs are really important. Looking at the, worming either, people do it differently. Some people will actually do a worm count in the manure and not then over, use drenches and things like that. And other people have them on a regular just drenching cycle.
I just want to clarify, Jane, because sometimes in Canada and the US, we don't call it a drench.
Yeah,
and it's you guys call it a drench, but sometimes here we squirt it in the mouth. We'll give them, some sort of dewormer. We call it a dewormer. We'll do it right in the mouth or down the back or however people do it. But just some of our friends might not know what a drench is.
I would call it a worming paste. That's what I would call it. We would also squirt the worming paste in their mouth. So we would do exactly that. And to be honest, I thought drench was more of a universal word. So then that was my bad.
We'll let it go, Janie.
So we have a neat question here. I'm not sure if you can see it there,
Janie. Yeah, I can. What are your thoughts on using crusher dust over gravel base for a paddock? We have three horses that will be sharing a paddock throughout the winter. Pull them off the pasture and we hope it's ready for summer. Look, I don't know because our paddocks are just whatever's naturally there. In Sydney, the base is basically sandstone. So we have an issue with sand and sand ingestion because they can get what they call sand colic. And basically Sydney is on the coast and it is built on sandstone, the whole place. So there's sand everywhere. You have to, every month we give the horses, people do this differently as well, but we give them psyllium husks in their food to hopefully collect up any sand that may have got into their gut and it passes through then. It's like, I don't know if you have this product in Canada, but it's like Metamucil.
And I wonder that too with Glenn's question too, like on the crusher dust over the gravel. Gravel based would be kind of hard because again, you're looking at the stone bruising and things like that.
Yeah.
But I think that's a really good point. So even when we put horses on something like a dust or a sand, they are going to ingest some of that. So if the sand is pulling through their intestines, it can create some sort of ulcer or some sort of injury. So that's a good recommendation. I like what you said there. Yeah. That's perfect.
And they can need an operation. So you want to avoid that for the horse's sake. And it can be an awful thing in a long recovery. It can be fatal, worst. And it absolutely costs thousands and thousands of dollars on top. So you'd want to avoid. Prevention's always better than cure. So, you're right, Bree. That's what I was thinking. The word dust doesn't sit so well with me with the horses because I know that they breathe it in, they eat it with their food. So I would say one thing that we do suggest is not ever putting the feed on the bare ground. So you would have, like, we've got these, they're literally old tire feeders that sit on the ground and you put it in there. So they're not eating directly off the ground and hopefully not ingesting any sand or dirt in that.
Old bathtub, whatever you got kicking around, whatever you want to
eat. If you really wanted to class it up, you could throw in the old bathtub.
You could throw the old bathtub. Yes. And again, that's for the dust and everything too. The whole environment is so huge because horses would naturally be on grass.
Yeah.
So that's a very important factor. You're right.
Good question, Glenn.
Yeah, thanks, Glenn.
Do you have
a story,
do you have a story, Jane, of something that kind of hit you, I guess, and when all of a sudden you're like, oh my gosh, this welfare is so important? Or was it just something that you always kind of knew you'd be looking into?
Well, I think I was a born animal lover, and I think I was a born person who always treated animals the same as people. So, yes, I think I've been on a big learning curve about horse welfare and looking after horses, most definitely. I mean, it's now not just it's not a hobby, it's a life. Like, I'm here every day. We do stuff with the horses every day. And as we were just saying, on the smaller acreage, it is a little bit of micromanaging. I know we hate that word in AO. So obviously I don't let the horses think they're being micromanaged, but
I'm wondering, what about your maintenance too, with like mucking everything out? I'm on a small acreage, so I love my piles of compost. I'm huge on composting and mucking out my stalls. So what do you think, or my paddocks? I don't have stalls. That was a lie. I don't know why I said I had stalls. I don't have stalls. you have stalls.
Yeah.
So how does that come into play? So how does the environmental management go on your small farm?
Yeah, that's a really good question, because we have a lot of horses here and they actually produce a lot of manure. So it's really weird. You feed them and they poop. Like, so
I swear, the food just gets bigger and then comes out.
Yeah. Recycler. Yeah.
We've got a management system where the manure is taken from the yards each morning and put into one pile. It's quite a complicated thing, but it works. So put into the first kind of piles near where it's taken from, one for ease of the people doing it. I have an absolutely wonderful stable manager called Abby, who's worked with me for 6 years now, and she's absolutely a gem. I really hope she does that course one day, just quietly. I'm saying that. I hope she's listening. Anyway, for ease of that. And then we have different girls who come and work on the weekends. We're often not here because we're off competing or something like that. So that's for ease of for someone working, because it is a lot of work. But then that manure gets taken further away from the arena and the buildings and everything like that, and we have three separate piles of it. And when I say piles, they are huge. So the first one, and it kind of gets moved down the line, and by the end of the line we have actually really beautiful fertilizer, totally decomposed.
That's exactly what we were just talking about with Bree.
Just talking about it.
It works really well, and all that turning and moving actually helps it compost, because it's rotating it around and rolling it around. So we have so much that I'm about to, that is a really good question, and that's one that I'll address. We do spread it in our paddocks. We have all these paddocks, and the parts that say near the gates and things always get very bare, so we spread it there. We spread it through the grass to help the grass grow. and we then spread it on the garden. But we're at a point where we're going to actually start giving it away. So if anyone from the area is listening, we've got heaps of beautiful fresh fertilizer that people can come pick up by the trailer load almost.
Yeah. So, and we can also see it if there's any community gardens or anything like that.
Yeah. Exactly.
They love donated fertilizer.
Yeah.
Yeah. We just call it work. Yeah. We call it work. Yes, the fertilizer. Yeah.
What are you using to pick up the manure?
Well, we basically use a rake and a wheelbarrow. Very modern, very and manpower. So yes, it's that. And then say in the yards is kind of sand based. So then sometimes we have those pooper scooper type things because that will filter the sand out. But the bulk of it is of it's literally a rake. A rake and a bucket or a wheelbarrow. So yeah. So it's quite intensive labor. But you know what? You do not need to go to the gym, tell you what.
No. So,
saves in gym fees.
Yeah, you get the muscles.
That's right.
Too, especially when we talk about parasites, do you think that sort of management is really important when you're talking parasites, worming, keeping your paddocks and your areas free of all of that manure?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So the stalls or stables and yards are done daily. The paddocks are done every, well, there's 7 days in a week. So it's kind of, they're done twice in Monday to Friday and then once on the weekend. So kind of three times a week to make sure that the old manure is not sitting there. And it sounds funny. People say to me who don't, you know, live, they say, isn't horse poo great for gardens and stuff? But yeah, but it really needs to break down. It takes a long time to break down. So hence the composting. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. We do compost before spreading. That question from Barbara, we do. Because it kind of goes through that thing. So the fresh manure goes into pile number one. And it gets turned into two, three, four. And then by the time it's four and it's been picked up and turned, then it's actual fertilizer. Yeah, really broken down.
Yep,
very nice.
So yeah, the horse manure actually needs to break down. It's a bit hot before you initially get it. So you need, like Jane, you were saying, you give it a few months to break down before you start spreading it out.
Yeah, it would be, I'd say, oh gosh, if I think about it, it'd probably be by the time we're spreading it, 2 months, something like that.
Yeah.
So, and remember, it's much warmer here than in Canada, so it breaks down very quickly.
Yeah,
it breaks down quite relatively quickly. Yeah. So it does take that time though. But you know, I was on a smallish acreage in New Zealand. I think it was about a month ago or so, where you know the one where we. Alice and I went and gave that talk.
Yeah.
And she had a great way of doing things as well. She had a big paddock where she had her herd, and she would run over the area with a kind of a mechanism behind her tractor that just kind of chopped it all up before. Yeah, it's chopped up all the manure and spread it fresh like that. And I thought that was a really good way to do it. It wouldn't work here where I am, the way I'm set up, but I thought what a great way to do that. So it's not all that laborious picking it up and piles number one, two, three, four.
Yeah.
But on that setup, it worked really, really well. So it kind of chopped it up and spread it without that all that middle work.
Yeah.
Yeah. The other thing is, so we've done feed and then what happens to the feed after, the manure, but also their feet are very important as well. So our EAL horses are largely barefoot, so they get trimmed just as regularly as if they were having shoes put on. So we really look after that. One of our EAL horses does need front shoes. She's always had shoes and she just has those kind of splay, crumbly feet that some horses have. So we tried her totally barefoot, but we found out that front shoes are better. So for her welfare, that's better. When we first got Frankie, our mini, we got him 8 years ago when we moved here. His little feet and teeth were terrible. His little hooves were, he kind of walked with his back feet a bit pigeon-toed or something in, and they were splitting. So the hoof wall was splitting away. And at first we thought, oh gosh, look, he might, this is so adorable. It didn't happen, but the farrier said you can actually put tiny little shoes on them. But they would have been like this.
He didn't
actually need them because it just took regular maintenance. Maintenance and care to trim up and make sure, help him walk a bit straighter and just keep it. And it's come back together and his feet are looking really good. So, yeah. So all of that makes a difference. And like, you know, Glenn was saying how they'll put on road base, our track around the whole property is road base. And, yeah, you're right with the stone bruises. You have to be careful, particularly after periods of rain where their feet get soft. So for the barefoot horses, it's something that you need to consider as well for their welfare. Yeah, but also I think the other thing we like to talk about is the emotional well-being of our horses, not just the physical. I'd like to think the physical is a something that we all like. That's our obligation. Yeah, it's our obligation when you have any animal in your life. It's your obligation to make sure that they have the basics of, you know, what they need there. We've recently also put up because the trees were getting very sparse and falling down and getting, you know, because of storms and things. So we've put up some wonderful shelters for the sun. Because really here, rain, you know, rain doesn't matter, but sun is, it's brutal here. So we put up shade for them, which is great. But on the emotional well-being, you know, you get to know your horses. And we have one guy, he's turning 21 this year. He's an ex-race horse. He's done eventing. He's done pony club, sporting, show jumping, dressage, you name it. This horse has done everything. He owes no human being anything, but he's very, very quirky. He's so cute. And he loves to dig holes like a dog. So he'll literally dig holes and then he'll stand on the pile of dirt that he's dug up from it, and it's really cute. Or he'll stand in the hole. So it's very strange. So
got a lot of pride.
Because he was kind of so playful, we started to give him, my daughter thought maybe he'd like one of those toys, one of those balls or one of those things where they roll it around and the treats come out or whatever. And not, he was scared of those. He would run over to it and he would strike at it and then run to the other corner. So we're like, okay, so he doesn't like the ball.
So not that.
But he's an easy man to please. We've actually given him a mound of dirt in his paddock and he digs away at it and he'll stand on it and he'll dig it down and slowly it gets down, he moves it around, so he just needs to be occupied and he's very, very happy.
I like that you recognize that. Mm-hmm. I like that you're going to that place with it, because sometimes a horse like this would be a problem. And people would say, oh, my God, he's digging up my paddock. He's doing all this stuff. But if that's a release for him and that is what makes him a healthy horse, then what's so wrong with that?
Yeah.
And that's the part that becomes so important with this, too. Like, that's one thing that we've noticed throughout this entire welfare series, is it all comes back to kind of what is our horse communicating to us and are we actually.
Yeah, exactly.
Right? So that's a perfect example of actually listening to what they want. Yeah. Okay. We did that with Brandon, too. Brandon likes to chew on things. He's never touched. But never seen him do anything with
the toy. Is not as smart. No.
But if he likes the mound of dirt, it's just like kid. Let them play in a box.
Yeah.
when we were adjusting him to other places, he would dig holes, and so we actually would get in a bit of trouble because people go, "He's wrecking our property." Exactly what you were saying there, Rick. He's wrecking our property and you've got to pay for us to repair this. And we're like, oh, and we'd say to him, please don't. It's costing us a fortune.
But, you know, everywhere he goes.
Yeah. So it's like we've worked out that that's just what he does. And he's very happy doing that. So, and they're all a bit quirky. They all have their quirky. Talking about welfare. All of the horses have a regular massage from an equine massage therapist here.
Sometimes a behavior is a symptom. That's just a little symptom of something else. And when we talk about welfare,
exactly.
It is really important because sometimes this behavior can be a result of something else going on.
So you check into all aspects.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, you still with Jenny.
I have to say, with the EAL horses, none of them are going to shows anymore. Oh, actually, no, one does occasionally. That's Little Bart. But what we do is it depends on the horse exactly. So, for example, for Opal's physical well-being, and I think it helps hers and my bond. She's the horse that's been with me for 12 years. She's 19 now. I do ride her. She's been out with a little bit of an injury that we've had to nurse to get better. But just with her body type, it does her a lot of good to that ridden exercise. And we do, look, it's like, 3 times a week, 20 minutes, half an hour. So it's not exactly a rigorous training program.
Yeah,
for
me,
it's a lovely, it's for her muscles. She's got a kind of a really rickety hip, and that helped them. If I get the muscles right, that helps keep her together. Whereas a couple of our other horses, for example, little Vinny and even Legs himself, the one that digs the holes in the mans and stuff, they look fantastic. And our massage, equine massage therapist, beautiful Mel Turner, she says as well how well they are, how good they are, how good they feel. And they're really not doing a lot of physical work, but we interact with them regularly. It's not like I would never just leave them and go, right, today's EAL, out you come, because how can I expect them to, you know, just turn on like that. So we work with them really regularly. It's important, I think, that they have time to just be themselves and with each other and all that sort of stuff. But I think it's really important that we work with them really regularly outside of our programs and things as well. That was a really good question. And I would say each one's different. We found with our little naughtiest, well, call him naughty, but he's just being honest, I suppose, little Bart, he kind of needs that extra stimulation of the work, the written work. He really seems to enjoy it, and he is the one that is still going to the occasional little competition and stuff. But, of course, being 20 now, I've got a lot of little oldies. It's obviously not very high level, it's not very intensive, but it keeps him fit, it keeps him alert and things like that. So I think if you know your horses well, you can work out a good routine that works with them.
Yeah, and I think that part of the maintaining is so important too. And we couldn't just, you know, like we don't have a ton of programs over some of the winter months because, well, nobody wants to leave your house.
Winter sucks.
But we have to make sure we're still working with the horses because we can't expect them to just, like, you know, be off for that
switch
many
on.
Months and then all of a sudden, you guys are back on playing again. What do you mean you aren't behaving like
exactly?
But
it's not fair to ask you to do that.
It's so funny because even things that aren't living, even if I had a dirt bike or a quad and I left it for three months and wanted to just pull it in and decided to start it up, those things still need maintenance. Everything needs maintenance and care.
Yeah.
And especially too, even just running through like a fake EAL program, having you walk over the rails and straight that top line is so beneficial.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well,
so beneficial.
It's like all true. Start for the bikini body. Like 1 month before the season hits,
in
right?
June?
No, you kind of got to keep the maintenance all year round. You're going to keep.
Why are you telling me that? I had a whole dream of just starting.
You look stunning.
I wanted to start in June 1st.
That's it. Next live she's on, it's in
between. But now it's, I guess I have to do it now.
So kind of onto the last little bit here. If you have one piece of advice for people who are going to a small acreage or a smaller facility, what would be your one piece of advice that you could give them to really figure out how to properly maintain their horse's well-being within it? Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Okay. Okay, good.
Yeah.
Well, I think that it's difficult to answer it with one piece of advice. I think everything we've said about all the physical aspects are really important to have those ducks in a row first, because you just have to make sure that everyone's physically safe.
Yeah.
But after that, I would say really look at and listen to your horses, because they're going to tell you what's lacking for them. and they're going to tell you if they're not happy in whatever way it manifests itself. And sometimes it's hard to work that out for a while. So, but after a while you get to know, okay, you know, like legs in his pile of dirt and all that sort of stuff, you get to know what the horses need. I know, for example, if I've been really busy otherwise than with the horses, my family or something like that, and I haven't spent as much time with them, they let me know that they're not happy with that as well. So you get to know really what your best routine is for your horses as well.
The battle, right? Like that's the most important is know them. You have to understand and know, because they all are just like people, different personalities, different needs, different wants, different piles of dirt. Like they all need their
different dirt.
Yeah.
Well, and that only comes from time. Mm-hmm. And I think what really
does,
like the biggest thing, the biggest takeaway from everything you said today is time, the investment of time. Yep. It's not the money. It's not anything else. It's time and looking at your horses and mapping out your property in such a way that it benefits everyone.
We've been warned, like we've got a horse here, and we were warned that she's not very nice, not very friendly, yada yada. We're like, what? This horse is just a kitten. She's beautiful. So do you know what I mean? Like it's just, again, a different environment that sort of thing. And I also want people on small acreages not to kind of, you know, lose heart and think, oh, I can't provide a good environment for my animals, because I've had a couple of independently, two different courses I ran with beautiful ladies who came from huge properties, like Australia would be like Canada, and the US, there are properties that are hundreds of thousands of acres. Not five is like a for those people. And they arrived, and this is two separate times and two separate people. They arrived at the beginning of the week and they kind of thought to themselves, and they told me at the end of the week, they thought, ooh, these horses won't be happy, right? The end of the week they went, my God, so surprised at how chilled, relaxed and how horse-like the horses are. You know, they're not manipulated in any way to be something other than they're not. So, yeah.
We can still live a natural life.
Yes.
On that small footprint. Mm-hmm. And especially now, even probably in Australia, here in Canada, populations are growing and the amount of land isn't. So it's really important to be able to maintain those small properties and have that. And we can still have that relationship with our animals and our small properties at the same time.
Totally. And if you look at the horse industry, I don't know if it's the same in Australia, but in Canada, less and less people all the time are going into a horse-based industry. So, which is kind of scary in the first place, but knowing that it's possible to have the smaller acreages, to have the smaller farms and still provide a really fantastic life for the horses, maybe gives a little bit more hope to people who would be like, I don't want 1,000 acres.
Might
like,
be
that sounds awful, right?
Even in your budget, like if you're not in the budget to purchase a quarter section of land, but there's a nice little 8 acres or something for sale, that makes the dream more real for people, and that creates an opportunity for these other horses to have a really beautiful life.
The smaller acreages are often nearer towns and cities. So, again, like I said in the beginning, it does provide that opportunity for people to have interaction with horses who otherwise wouldn't.
Yes.
It's not the travel or the time involved. So I love that aspect. My acreage, Barbara, is 5 acres, so it is small. But, you know, the girls who came from the thousands were thinking that 40 and 50 are small. So it is a matter of perspective.
True. Yeah. Because, I mean, yours is 10.
Yeah.
Our last one, we had 3 acres and then rented another 10. So that was 13, but that was still small.
Yeah.
So it's a matter of perspective on that.
And again, I think it's relative. Yeah. The time you have. If you have time to exercise your horses and have time to get them the care they need or get help to help you do it for your small acreage, great. If you have a large place where they can walk daily and forage and be out, great. So it's whatever's relative to your position in life at that moment.
I know we have rules here in Canada of how many horses, well, and it's different places actually have different rules, but of how many horses you can have per acre or whatever else. Do you guys have that as well in Australia?
Not in the city, no, because you have them in, stables with yards and then individual paddocks or shared paddocks. So, no, there's not. But maybe there is in the country. I actually don't know what that is.
I don't have any in my area. There isn't set regulations, but I would imagine neighbors or people who are looking at the welfare of your horses as they go by, had they seen a ton of horses, say on an acre of land, 15 mm-hmm. horses on 1 acre yeah. of land, might be a little bit much. So yeah. I think it would just depend to for their welfare on that piece.
And that goes with the feeding too. Obviously, if it's a smaller place, you are going to have to subsidize some food because yeah. they have it all from eating grass, right? So yeah. it's just making sure that they're still being cared for properly and they're high.
Yep.
Yeah. Oh my goodness.
It's going to be what am I saying? I don't know.
And I think that's exactly the point, Carolyn, is that that rule is for when the horses are eating out kind of thing and just that's the amount they need. But when you're providing that, like we, as I said, with the food, we have to kind of micromanage that. So, yes, there's grass, but it's more of a pick. It's not going to sustain a horse.
No.
So they have what we call hard feeds and they have hay. So they are maintained that way. And we spread it out so that they have something all the time to pick at.
I have one horse there that always makes me think of proper welfare. And we won't tell like the whole story of him or anything like that, but he came from kind of a mixed background and you ended up giving him a home and a purpose. And that's one thing I think when we're looking after the welfare of the horse, yes, you obviously want to know a little bit of their background and that kind of thing, but you also have to look at the horse themselves. Yeah. And this book that you got, he ended up just being a beautiful, beautiful horse for equine assisted learning as well.
Right. He would have otherwise been retired just into the country, which I'm sure everyone's thinking, wouldn't that be a much better life than 5 acres and doing AAL programs? Mm-hmm. But he's really thriving. I really do think that he found his purpose in doing EAL programs. We've noticed working with him that he works, we think he works better, and I know you girls have said this with your horses, that he loves the children. He's, how you've got the ones that, are kind of better with the kids or not. He loves that. He thrives with that. So you're right. I think that the emotional well-being of the horse is very important and that purpose as well. And on this small acreage, we have quite a routine. And I do think the horses feel safe with that routine. They know the people who come and look after them every day. So myself, Abby, who I mentioned, my daughter, they know all of us. They know what we're going to do. They know where they go. They know all the little routine. They know when their hay's out and when this happens. They know everything, and they're very comfortable that. If we break routine, we can see them getting quite, nervous, like what's happening. So I think that that's an important thing as well on the small acreage.
Yeah. Well, I think the routine is healthy for the people that care for the horses, all of us, because then it keeps us accountable too.
It does, yep.
I think when you have horses in your life, you really have to understand, like you said before, Jane, it's a lifestyle.
Yeah, yeah.
It's not just a job. It's something that you need to do. I know even here, it gets very cold, probably there. It's so extremely hot, but the horses always come first.
Yeah, you still get out there and
our house, right? Yeah, if the tractor breaks down, you're out there hand feeding when it's minus 40 Celsius. Same at your place, you're there hand feeding when it's plus 40 Celsius. So the horses always come first, and that routine is huge because it's for us as well.
Yeah, it is. And it doesn't matter if you're sick or if or if you had a bad night's sleep or something like that, that's bad luck.
Sucks to be you.
That's right.
Exactly.
Yes.
Yeah. Jane, thank you so much for joining us today. It's so lovely to see your face.
Thank you, Jane. Thank you for having me. Beautiful to see you too as well.
All right, darling. Well, we will talk to you soon. Thanks again, Janie.
Thank you.
Talk to you guys later and have a great one, keeping the welfare of your horses in mind at all times. Yes. See you guys next week.
Thank you.
Thanks, Jane.
Bye.
Thanks so much for tuning in today with us gals from Equine Connection on today's episode of Changing Lives with a Horse, of course. Next week, we're going to have tons more information, and please join us then for more chatting on how these phenomenal creatures are really the best teachers around. We'll talk to y'all then.